Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley, and we thank you for being with us. Our show each week is brought to you by the law firm of Flesh and Beck Law. Their number, 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh joins us in studio today. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Scott. Thanks.
Man, I tell you, I think the legal world, because every time we do these shows, and we've been doing them for many, many years now, and, you know, I talk to people, they're like, man, you guys always go over some stuff that's just really cool and break it down, because we've all watched the court shows and police shows on TV, and which is probably mostly not what real life is.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it is, but most of the time it's not. Yeah, absolutely right.
And so, you know, I'm so glad, because, man, we provide hopefully some education for people and just to know what to do when they get into certain situations. And you said recently on the show, you know, boy, there's so many things that when you end up in a legal battle, there were probably things that were available to you you did not do, and that's why you're in a legal mess. And our topic today is something that is 100%, 100% of the time avoidable.
100% preventable, completely.
And that's
yes.
DUI.
Yes. It's failure to plan.
But it happens.
It's amazing how often it happens.
So much.
With the amount of resources that we have in our community in the Front Range to be able to get home from wherever you're at, because normally you're going home after being in, after consuming alcohol, generally speaking, or marijuana, and getting behind the wheel. I mean, it's just one of those things where I'm amazed by the amount of cases we still have with all of the resources that people have to make better decisions. Because it's, like you said, it's completely preventable. And that's the conversation I have the majority of the time with people that get themselves into the situation with what was going on. And it's always interesting because many times it's a failure to plan. But sometimes it's something did happen. You know, I got jumped in a bar, and I didn't think that I needed to be there or I needed to stay there. It was an emergency situation, so I got in my car and I drove. You know, why didn't you just drive a block, get out of your car, and call the police? You know, I mean, it's stuff like that that
sure.
people don't really think about. And obviously, you're intoxicated, so you're not making the best decisions anyway. But, this show is not about, you know, oh, it's okay to drink and drive.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there you can legally drink and drive. I mean, I make that argument all the time with individuals who have two drinks and they're below, you know, the 0.05 level, because it does happen. I have a number of cases a year where we get the blood results back and they're below the legal limit. And then the DA, you know, a lot of times young DAs in particular will say, well, they were still acting like they were under the influence. Yeah, but the standard for alcohol is 0.05. And so if they're below that, they're actually legally driving.
Right.
And that's, you know, but most people don't know what that limit is. I mean, it's a drink and a half in a couple of hours. It's not very much, you know, before you're driving illegally. And so, again, it's just one of those situations where you've got to plan those things out. And the smart people, the people that have a plan, never see me about this issue. A lot of times, though, what's going on with DUIs is there's lots of things going on in a person's life, and it's just an indicator of their lives being out of control.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so those sorts of scenarios, then my job is a little different, because now I'm trying to not only help people through the criminal process, making sure that they don't have to spend any time in jail, but then helping them with their lives to figure out empathetically, why is this happening? Why is alcohol such an important part of your life? How do we help you with that so that this doesn't happen again? And then you become a better person, because you're not relying on some sort of substance to balance out the issues that you're having.
Right.
And those sorts of conversations, as I've grown in my practice, those conversations are actually really fun conversations for people who are willing to admit that they have a problem. Those conversations are really good conversations to have, because we can really help people in the sense of giving them suggestions about what they need to do that long term will help them so that they don't have any more issues in their lives.
Sure.
And they're better planners.
And people need to understand, DUI is on your record forever.
Ever.
We talked about this.
Yeah.
No matter what ages.
Nope, doesn't matter. So that's the interesting thing. There was a perception, a misperception years ago that because DMV, basically your history fell off after about 7 years whenever you had any sort of things in on your driving history in the way of tickets and also alcohol-related offenses, that those, once they dropped off, they were gone. But that's not what the statute says anymore. It's a lifetime history, and there's about 36 states in the union now that sort of communicate with each other. So if you have an alcohol-related offense in another state, even 40 years ago, it's going to come up, and it's going to affect what happens with a sentence in this state now, mm-hmm. relating to any sort of alcohol-related offense or any DUID sort of situation. So those things don't go away. So they're always important to deal with, even if it's a first offense. You want to get a lawyer and you want to deal with it, even if you think that it's a rather simple matter to resolve.
Sure.
You're going to want to get counsel, because there's many times where there's some tech. There's the interesting thing about DUI defense is there's a lot of technical mm-hmm. things that come up that unless you're doing it on a regular basis, you're going to miss some of those things that people don't really realize until they've missed them.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's motions issues. There's procedural things that the police need to do. There's things that come up, you know. A good example is on a ready report, for example. So we always see the state patrol saying, you know, see a drunk driver, report it sort of thing. Normally those are anonymous reports. And so the anonymous report isn't bad. It helps us make sure that we get anybody that is under the influence off the roads, because normally the state patrol will try to find them mm-hmm. and then watch them. But if the person is then driving in front of the state patrol and they pull them over for something when they didn't do any bad driving, for example, then maybe a case that you can get thrown out. Because there's no reasonable suspicion at the point in which the state patrol pulls them over, because an anonymous tip isn't necessarily a credible one, because you don't get in the criminal process, you don't get to cross-examine that person because you don't know who it is. And constitutionally, those cases are much more easily defended.
Right.
But normally what the state patrol does is they follow you long enough that you do something wrong in the way of a legal issue with driving, and then they pull you over for that. So,
sure.
But I've had situations where a person is pumping gas at a gas station. They had a ready report at a bar that they were drunk, and the officer starts talking to them. Well, there's no reasonable suspicion at that point, because my client wasn't driving. They weren't even behind the wheel. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's a case where clearly they're under the influence, and clearly they shouldn't have been driving, but it's not a legal matter at that point because they don't have reasonable suspicion to be in contact with them, and those are the cases that we get dismissed. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do it on a regular basis, you wouldn't understand that.
Absolutely.
And so those are the sorts of things that we help people with, understanding what exactly is in the discovery. That's the evidence that the prosecution has against the people, and diagnosing what it is that we think we can do to help people. And I'm not trying to get people out of what was done. What I'm trying to do is make sure
you still have rights.
Yep.
No matter what you've done, pretty much in the legal world, you still have rights.
Exactly. I mean, our Constitution was put together for a reason, to make sure that the one person that is not guilty of any crime is protected, and that the process is fair. And mm-hmm. so that's really what we're looking at, to make sure that the process is working correctly, because we don't want the process to get out of hand and be. You know, you want to have faith in our criminal justice
sure.
system. And I have faith in it. I mean, I would say it's the best system in the world, and I think that at the end of the day, the jurors making decisions about guilt or innocence relating to a crime, and those individuals are in the community, are the best arbiters of what's right or wrong.
Right.
And so the idea of these cases is to make sure that you have somebody on your side advocating for you, and we're also helping you get better, because a lot of times that's what we're talking about in
right.
these cases, rehabilitation, and not really looking at the punitive sanctions of it. And the nice thing about getting us on early in the process is you can start a lot of these things that you would have to do on probation anyway, and then you shorten your time period on probation potentially, and that way you save yourself money relating to the process itself too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, you're listening to Legal Talk. Attorney Kevin Flesh is with us. All right. Now, to understand a DUI, first of all, there's several different initials for
yes.
different charges. There's DUI, driving under the influence, DWI, And then OWI.
Yep.
So kind of explain the differences there.
Yeah. So in Colorado, the vernacular here, for the most part, is the DUI and the DWAI. So the driving under the influence means that you're substantially incapable of driving a motor vehicle after consuming, generally speaking, it's alcohol, but it can be drugs too. And it can be prescription drugs. And that would be a DUID, where you're dealing with drugs versus alcohol. So the idea from the standpoint of the statute is that's sort of the high watermark of the worst case scenario that you have relating to an alcohol related offense when you haven't had an accident and hurt someone. So if you just have your regular sort of traffic stop, you're over the limit, and the limit for the DUI is 0.08 blood alcohol levels. So that's you can take a breath or a blood test. Those are the chemical tests that you would take in Colorado relating to the determination of your alcohol content in your blood. The idea with that is that there's been enough study relating to the ingestion of alcohol and how it affects you that if you're at that level or higher, the legislature has determined that that by itself is an indicator that you're impaired, substantially impaired to drive a motor vehicle. So that's the idea. Now, the lesser included of these crimes is the DWAI, and it's driving while ability impaired to the slightest degree is essentially what the DWAI stands for. And the idea is that that level is between 0.05 and 0.08 BAC.
Okay.
So it's a lower alcohol content in your blood, but it's still enough that they say that you're impaired to the slightest degree. So that's a really low standard. I mean, if you think about it.
It doesn't take much.
It doesn't take much at all. Right. And the idea, you know, there's sometimes that we still haven't gotten to the point where if you're sleepy, that you could be charged with a DWAI. But I, every once in a while, I'll have an argument from a district attorney that, you know, that affects your ability to drive and you could be charged, but you can't be in Colorado. The only way that you can be charged is if you've ingested some sort of alcohol or drug. And the same thing is true with the DWAI, is it can be a drug-related offense as well.
Okay.
But generally speaking, relating to the alcohol, it's a very low standard. And that's what's a lot of times happens when you, let's say you have a blood alcohol level of 0.14, and but there's circumstances surrounding the stop that are an issue, and the district attorney has some concerns about me being able to argue to have the case dismissed. Maybe they'll offer a DWAI, a lesser included traffic matter, shorter periods of probation, less community service, those sorts of things, to resolve the case. And that's where we see a lot of those sorts of resolutions of the cases taken care of. The same thing can be true for drugs. Marijuana is interesting because we don't have a specific level that the legislature has said that you reach and then you're impaired because there hasn't been enough study relating to it. There's sort of this 5 nanogram standard that if you're below it, you're probably not impaired. If you're above it, you are. But that has not been determined yet. It's something that the DAs try to use, but the legislature hasn't sort of given us that bright line test like they have in the alcohol-related offenses.
Right. So since that the marijuana whole thing started in Colorado, have you seen a rise?
Yeah, sure have. Okay. Because what has happened is we've had a population of people that have moved here that are chronic smokers. They're smoking every day. And what happens is, unlike alcohol, you shed off the alcohol in your bloodstream pretty quickly. The THC that you ingest relating to using marijuana stays in the fatty cells of your blood, or in your body. And so when you have a blood test taken, those that THC is in your body for a long time, up to 30 days.
Oh, wow.
And so you may be, you know, I have lots of folks that will not smoke on a particular day or not ingest THC on a particular day, but they'll still have high THC levels because they have the last week or so. And so even though, and that's where it's really important to do the voluntary roadside maneuvers a lot of times, because those voluntary roadside maneuvers will show that physically you don't have an issue, but your blood suggests that you're still impaired. And so if you're in a situation where you do smoke on a regular basis and you're still driving, you know, almost every day if you were pulled over and they have reasonable suspicion to believe you're impaired,
sure.
You will want to go through those roadsides to show that you're still physically able to drive a vehicle. Because if you don't, then they're going to get this blood work back that shows you were high on THC when you weren't. Mm-hmm. And those are cases that people get themselves into a lot of trouble. And that's really the trouble with people consuming THC on a regular basis, is I would say the majority of the time they're probably driving under the influence,
yeah,
based upon their blood. And so that's, we're waiting for more studies relating to that. And those cases are really, what we normally do to really defend those cases is there's some experts in the state now that are testifying about that specific issue and the fact that even though you have these high levels, you may not be impaired based upon other evidence.
Okay.
And so those are the things where people really need to think about if they get pulled over and they're asked to do these things. Because generally speaking, relating to an alcohol-related offense, I would advise people to never do the voluntary roadside maneuvers, because you don't need to provide the police officer and in turn the district attorney more evidence of your impairment.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do that. But in the event that you don't believe you are impaired relating to marijuana, for example, but you know that your THC levels are going to be high because you're smoking or ingesting THC through edibles or whatever on a regular basis, you're going to want to do those roadsides because it may be exculpatory. It may be evidence that you can use at trial to say, look, I did the follow the line test fine. I didn't have any nystagmus in my eyes. The nystagmus
are
is
those
the,
recorded?
They are. They're all on body cameras now.
Okay. All right.
Which, that's another topic that we should talk about, is that in the last two years, most of the police forces have now gotten body cameras for all of their officers. Okay. And that body camera footage is really beneficial, generally speaking, for the defense. What it does is it clarifies exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Before, we would rely on the reports from the officers, and the reports were almost always embellished about what took place. Now we get to see those roadsides. And in the case of individuals who are allegedly under the influence of marijuana,
right,
they can be really helpful when you're not, when you're able to do these things. Because generally speaking, the officers are trained to almost always say that you've not done the voluntary roadside maneuvers as a sober person would do. I very rarely see it where they don't make that statement. So, but to actually see it in person is really beneficial, especially for jurors to see, well, he looks pretty good. He's not swaying. He's not slurring his words, even though the officer said he was. You know, there may be red, bloodshot, watery eyes, but there's lots of reasons for
right.
that. Nystagmus is a big deal when it comes to marijuana, because you shouldn't have any nystagmus. That's where they do the test with the eyes, where you have the involuntary jittering of the eyes on the outer portion of the eye. And that normally indicates the ingestion of alcohol, or it could be a closed head injury. I mean, there are reasons that you have nystagmus that aren't related
sure.
to being impaired. And so those are all things that we need to consider when talking to a person and talking with them about what took place mm-hmm. during that period of time. Because let's say if somebody got into an accident and did have a head injury, well, when the officer does the nystagmus test, it could very well be related to that head injury and not related to an alcohol-related offense.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
Stuff we need to think about.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I said a DUI is always on your record. All these other initials, too?
Yep.
They stay forever?
Forever.
Okay.
Any alcohol-related offense is always on your record for for your remainder of your life.
Right. And when it comes to the defense of this, I mean, there are several points, you know, just wanted to bring out today that for people to understand is, you want to talk about a charge that's got some important time structures to it. There are some things people have to understand. I mean,
yeah,
you've got certain
DMV.
Days to yep. do different things. So explain that.
Exactly. So relating to the DMV. So you have you've been pulled over. You do a breath test. The breath test comes back above the legal limit, above 0.08. The officer is going to take your driver's license. They're going to give you what's called an express consent affidavit. And in that express consent affidavit, they'll have you sign specifically at the bottom, and it'll have an advisement to you that is your license once they've taken your physical driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be your license, your driver's license, for 7 days. It's generally a yellow piece of paper, and the advisement says that you have the right to request a hearing with the Department of Motor Vehicles within 7 days of being arrested. If you don't make that request within that 7-day period of time, you lose your right to a hearing. And you want to have a hearing with DMV. A lot of people get confused about the fact that when they are arrested for a DUI, there's two things that happen. One is the criminal process. That's related to your liberty and what you may have to do with the county court wherever this happened. That's the first process, and you'll have a summons where you have to appear in court.
Okay.
The second part of what takes place will be this serving of the express consent affidavit, which basically says that while driving in Colorado, you agree that if the officer has probable cause to ask you to do a test, a chemical test, that you've done a chemical test, the result of that, and it's always a breath test that this happens, the result of the breath test is over the legal limit, and you now have had your license taken from you, and you have 7 days to request this hearing. You want to request, in my opinion, you want to request that the officer be present, because there's a certain period, there's 20-25% of the time the officers don't show up for these hearings. And if they don't show up when you've requested them to show up, then you get your driver privilege back. So, and the driving privilege issue is a separate issue from the county court issue. County court has no control over what happens with your driver's license, only DMV. Your privilege to drive is controlled by DMV, not the county court. Now, the county court may affect your ability to drive based upon the amount of points that you're either convicted of or you agree to through a plea bargain. You can only get 11 points in any rolling calendar year. Anything above 11 points, you lose your privilege to drive based upon points.
Gotcha.
You also lose it on based upon an alcohol-related offense. So this particular instance we're talking about specifically, the night of, you do the breath test, it's above the legal limit, they take your driver's license. The other thing that's confusing is if you opt not for a breath test but for a blood test, and that blood test right now is taking anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks to get those results back.
Oh, wow.
So you'll be arrested. You've decided to take the blood test. They've done the blood. There's two vials of blood that they send off to the lab. They keep one for defense, so we get it retested. The other blood they'll actually analyze and get a result. So the night of your arrest, in that case, you'll only get the summons. You'll still have your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have your driver's license because on the night of the arrest, they don't know what your blood alcohol level was. And so you'll keep that driver's license, and you've got a perfectly good driving history until you get notice from DMV that the results have come back and the results are above the legal limit. Then you again have an obligation very quickly to make a request for that DMV hearing. Otherwise, you lose it. So a lot of people get confused about that. They're like, well, I still have my driver's license, and I'm waiting for the blood results. The other thing that they get upset about is the fact that, generally speaking, you show up for your first appearance for your criminal case in the county court. They don't have the blood results back yet, so you have to continue it out. And a lot of folks, a lot of folks want to get these things done quickly. So they're like, well, I'll just plead to something. Well, you don't want to because you don't know what those blood results are going to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that people don't realize is that if it's just a purely a marijuana issue, there's no regulations about your driver's license and marijuana right now in Colorado. So if you do a blood test and it comes back that your amount of THC in your system were 17 nanograms, for example,
right,
which is really high. But the legislature, because there isn't a specific bright line, oh, if you're above this number, you're impaired, you have no nothing happens to your driver's license while the process is moving forward. Now, if you get convicted of a 12-point DUI because of marijuana down the road, that will affect your ability to drive based upon points. But it won't be until you have that county court matter resolved.
Right. Now, that number of days, 7 days, does that start from the date of the ticket, the date you get out of jail?
Yeah, it starts the date of the arrest.
Okay.
So if you're in custody, because I have this happen a lot, people may be sitting in jail for 2 or 3 days. Let's say if you get arrested on Friday night, you have two priors, so they've been unwilling to give you a bond until Monday morning. You've lost 3 days. So you've got to get that done. That
now you got 4 days.
Yep. Okay. So you want to make that request. You can do it online now, which is great. So you have the ability to do it virtually, but you want to get it done right away, even if you were in custody. They do have a process that, let's say you were in custody for 10 days and you've missed your window. They do have a process that you can explain that to DMV and say the reason that I didn't make the request is because I was in custody the whole time.
Right.
And it's a few days after that deadline. They will normally allow you to have a hearing and they'll normally waive that 7-day requirement. But it's a very small percentage of the folks that fall into that category. So if you're out of custody, if you're out in the community, you need to get it done within that 7 days of being arrested.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. And I mean, we always see on TV somebody gets arrested and go, well, I get my phone call. Is that really? So I guess what is the step for the person? They get arrested, they go to jail. Do they get a loved one? They try to get in touch with a loved one to call you? I mean, what? How do they get a hold of you then?
The officers will generally give you the ability to make a phone call.
Okay.
But it comes down to how you've reacted to that officer,
yeah,
and how gracious they want to be about it. I mean, there's no constitutional rule that says, you know, within the time period of being arrested that you immediately get to have a phone call. Most of the time they do it because it's good for them to do it, and you're going to be out within 24 hours anyway, so mm-hmm. they'll give you the opportunity to, because most of us don't anymore know the phone numbers that we need
exactly.
to call.
Yeah.
So they'll normally let you, while you're sitting in booking, while you're waiting, because there's a 20-minute deprivation period in which you have to not be consuming anything and make sure that your mouth is all clear before you do a breath test.
Okay.
It'll be normally during that time period that the officer will allow you to make a phone call to tell somebody, hey, I'm in jail. I may call you later after I get out. Can you come and get me? That sort of thing.
Gotcha.
So what a lot of people have trouble with is that they say, well, I wasn't Mirandized when I was pulled over. And you're not entitled to a Miranda warning before, because normally what happens is they'll ask you a bunch of questions, and the voluntary roadside maneuvers, you're not under arrest. They're voluntary.
Gotcha.
And so Miranda, what we think of Miranda, Miranda's essentially interrogation of you when you're in custody. You're not in custody when you do those voluntary roadside maneuvers. So all of those statements that you make are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that I tell people is say as little as possible.
Yeah. Don't Which unfortunately
jabber on.
Is usually not what goes along with yeah. being intoxicated, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And a first-time DUI, and this is, we can say this, without an accident. Okay,
yes.
Just you got pulled over. Mm-hmm. You're tapping on the door $10,000,
yes.
right?
It's a very expensive Uber ride.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's a lot. And that's the trouble, is that the system is set up that there's lots of things you'll have to do to rehabilitate yourself, and it all costs money.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is always have a plan if you intend to be out drinking and have your vehicle. So
yeah.
figure something else out, because it's just so much easier.
Absolutely.
And then you don't have to deal with me,
yeah.
which, I mean, I like seeing people, but
sure.
I'd rather not see them dealing with these issues.
Absolutely. Yep. Kevin, great information. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. You've been listening to Legal Talk for Kevin Flesh. My name is Scott Watley. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week. Don't go anywhere. Dr. Ben coming up next right here on KLZ 560.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
With rates on the rise, how do you get the best rate? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Did you know that when you get cash out, or your FICO score is below a 740, or you're financing a condo versus a single family home, it will cost you more in rate and fees? Many lenders are charging more. Stop paying it. At Affordable Interest Mortgage, we have lenders that don't charge. Trying to purchase a second home, or is your loan amount considered a high balance or jumbo? There they go again, charging you more. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Let us show you a loan that doesn't charge more. Seeing a low rate but not reading the small print, only to realize all the extra costs and fees? Again, stop. Call 720-895-0500. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Quit paying fees and closing costs that are unnecessary. Get a low rate without all the extra cost. Let us show you how to save thousands. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. 720-895-0500. Serving Coloradans for over 20 years. NMLS 298191. Regulated by DORA.
Zip around the neighborhood, commute to work, or ride the trails on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi. founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are electric bikes that are fun and easy to ride. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. At eBike of Colorado, we have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Just try it. Take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
You're listening to KLZ 560 AM, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery.
And good afternoon and welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard. I'm your host, Andy Pate, and we're brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Denver. Dr. Ben, how are you?
No, doing great. Thank you. How's your day going?
You know, it's going well. I'm looking outside. It's a weird day. It's just crystal clear out there, not a cloud in the sky, but you walk out there and it's biting cold with high winds.
Yeah, I think Wyoming has come down to Colorado.
It has. It has. We should have put up a wall or something. Wyoming cannot come here. Okay. Before we get going, I just want to mention to people your new patient special again. It's just $97. And folks, that's valued at $600. And when people hear that, they think it's just a markup, but it really isn't. There's a ton of high-tech testing and diagnosis involved. So just go to Functional Medicine Centers. Tell them you heard about it on KLZ. Really quick here, the phone numbers in Highlands Ranch, it's 720-704-6147. Fort Collins, 970-282-1173. And Dr. Ben, today I want to talk about something that's really hitting a lot of people, and that is after COVID or long COVID. And for our listeners, maybe you or someone you know has had COVID and you're still dealing with the after effects. Today we're going to look at why that is and what we can do. And so first, Dr. Ben, I just want to ask you, if people are having long-term complications from COVID, after a month or so, is it still COVID?
Yeah, so that's the interesting part. And what we see, let's just get into some of the symptoms first. So this is what people are feeling. If you're more than, let's say, a month out and you've had COVID and you still have brain fog, that's where you're just a little bit out of it. Mentally, you walk into a room, forget why you go in there. Maybe you do that anyways. But just, you know, a little bit more degenerated on the brain side than before COVID. Maybe the lungs are still irritated. It can be this fatigue. It can be muscle pain, muscle soreness, joint pain, joint soreness. That we've seen blood pressure differences where people get, when they stand up, they get super dizzy, all types of different conditions. If you just do a quick Google search, you'll probably find your symptoms on there because there's like 100 different symptoms that have been reported. And there's full-on COVID long-haul clinics that are set up and all types of different things. So, yes, if you're having symptoms post 30 days after having COVID, it's no longer the virus. That virus has been dealt with. Your antibodies have revved up. Your immune system's dealt with it, and you no longer are dealing with an active virus. But now you're dealing with the consequences of that virus. We all know that COVID was a real thing, and you know, people got sick with COVID. Some people died with COVID. We know it was a disease primarily that people were dying and getting really sick from that had pre-existing conditions. They had diabetes. They had high blood pressure. They were overweight, obese, all those things. And the research is showing is that, again, more of those people are dealing with the COVID long haul, but even some healthy people, even some people that got mild cases can still be dealing with these COVID long haul symptoms.
Now, is it just COVID or are some people dealing with after effects of, say, the vaccine?
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting parts. You know, they're both looking at this spike protein, and even with the shot, we have seen similar things. We've seen inflammatory processes go through the roof. We've seen autoimmune issues get flared up, both after the infection and after the shot. So it's something that, it's real. people can have these reactions, and you've got to know how to treat the body as a whole and deal with this whole inflammatory process, because there's no amount of Tylenol, there's no amount of prednisone, whatever medication they want to throw at somebody, those are not going to fix these. These are, you know, it truly is the time for functional medicine, because you know, these conditions do not have a surgery, do not have a drug, anything that can be helped.
Okay, well, we're going to get to general poor diet and health here in a moment. But first, I want to ask, how much of these issues, long COVID, everything you just listed, are really just stimulating old problems that you've dealt with before? Maybe you've dealt with them, they've gone away, or at least you thought they went away, and now they've come back, roaring back, coming out of COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we've been looking at for quite a few months now is a research article where they were looking at people that had long COVID symptoms, and they tested, and the majority of the patients with those long COVID symptoms had what's called reactivated Epstein-Barr virus, where the ones that did not have these symptoms and they had COVID, a very small percentage had reactivated Epstein-Barr. And so what Epstein-Barr virus is the virus that causes mono. And It's one of those viruses, just like COVID is a virus that's in your body, and then once it's gone, it's gone, and then you have antibodies to it, and then it may come back when you get another infection, things like that. But things like Epstein-Barr, things like chickenpox can turn into shingles, but that Epstein-Barr virus never truly goes away. And what can happen is if somebody gets depleted enough, if they get COVID, if they get this inflammatory process from there, it can reactivate this virus, just like somebody gets shingles because they get run down and stressed and depleted. Same thing happens here. And so the majority of people in this one study that had COVID long haul was actually reactivated Epstein-Barr. So that's where a lot of that fatigue, muscle aches, pains, brain fog. If you've had mono, it's very similar to that. And a lot of times it's a reactivated process, which the traditional medical model really has nothing for mono, but that's something that we work with all the time with patients, is chronic viral infections.
Okay, I want to jump ahead a little bit. We'll come back to the poor diet and health, but you brought up mono and Epstein-Barr and how this can, you know, inflame it and bring it back. What do you guys do differently at functional medicine centers? Because I know so many people, they will try this supplement and that supplement, and they'll get the symptoms down. Basically, they become symptom chasers. You've heard of ambulance chasers, right? A lot of people become symptoms chasers, and they want to take something, get the symptoms down, but it's really not going away. And what it becomes is a lot of trial and error. And so at functional medicine centers, how do you cut past all the trial and error and get to the real issues quickly so you can get them the help they need?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the crucial part of this, whether it is a reactivated Epstein-Barr or whether it's an inflammatory process that has put stress on other systems in the body, you've got to figure out what is out of balance, what is driving this inflammatory process, what's suppressing that immune system and allowing these other viral infections to take hold on the body. And you've got to work through step by step through that process. There's no magic bullet. There's no amount of vitamin D or zinc or NAC or any of these things. By the way, NAC, we just got a note from our distributor for our supplements, and they said, no, NAC, you got to take off the label that it's a dietary supplement. The FDA just said it. You can't call it that anymore.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's one of the few things that worked with COVID. There's no amount of supplements that's going to fix somebody, just like there's no drug that's going to fix somebody or a surgery or anything like that. You've got to dig deep and you've got to figure out what is truly going on with these systems, which are out of balance, and then you just move your feet and you start working step by step through that process. If the blood sugar's off, you fix that. If the adrenals are off, you fix that. If the gut's off, you fix that. You just go through step by step and people start getting their life back. There was an article If you do a quick Google search on Gwyneth Paltrow, she's an actress and entrepreneur, has a bunch of businesses and different things. And she had some pretty major COVID long haul symptoms going on. And she ended up reaching out to a world renowned functional medicine doctor that works with patients and started working with him. And they went through system by system this same process, and it took months for them to get their body back, but ultimately it got to that point where she's got her brain back, that brain fog's gone, energy's better, inflammation is better, all of these things have changed, and she's back to being herself again.
You know, one of the big differences at functional medicine centers is narrowing the paths. And what I mean is this: people will hear that, right? And they'll hear, oh my gosh, it's a step-by-step-by-step process. It's going to take forever. I'll never get there. What's the use? I'll just supplement. All right. But here's the thing. What they don't understand is there's actually not one path. There's like 50 different paths, depending on what's wrong with you. Okay. You go into you guys, you do all this high tech testing, you do the brain maps, you do the blood testing and all this, and you narrow that down from 50 to one or two very quickly. And then you can put them on the path and they start to notice the differences very quickly.
Absolutely. And that's what has to happen. You read that article and that interview with Gwyneth Paltrow, and you know, she talks specifically about doing the blood work testing and about digging deep and like, oh, wow, all these inflammatory markers and all these systems are out of balance. And so she went and cleared out sugar out of her diet and alcohol out of her diet and started fine-tuning to anti-inflammatory foods and working on different systems in the body. And that's when you start seeing these changes, is you've got to know what's going on. You can't just guess and walk down the aisles of Whole Foods or natural grocers and go, I wonder what supplements I should take today.
Right. Here are my symptoms. Let's just match it up.
Yeah, because you could go talk to the little high school girl working at Whole Foods and go, hey, I'm tired. What do you think it is? And like, maybe it's your thyroid. Here, take this thyroid supplement. And you're like, you have no idea at all if it's a thyroid. Hopefully it's not going to hurt somebody. But, you know, best case scenario, it won't hurt you, you know, but it's definitely not going to fix anything just taking a supplement. You know, I always say you can't out-supplement bad diet, poor diet. You can't out-supplement a poor immune system. So, yes, we use supplements all the time, but you've got to know exactly which systems are out of balance, and then let's move our feet and let's just start working through step by step by step through that process to get you your life back.
You know, you also can't out-supplement poor diagnosis. I mean, I want to ask you this. Dr. Ben, how many times have people come into you and you run them through the blood work, the brain map, and people don't understand the brain map, but it ties in to your whole body and how it interacts with your brain. You run them through these things, and then how many times have you looked at them and said, let's say the guy's name is Bob. Bob, just so you know, these four or five things that you've been doing aren't really making any difference. No offense, they're wonderful supplements. They're just not meant for you. They don't tie in. How many times have you had to give people the news? A lot of what they've been buying and doing isn't having any effect.
Every day, and we call that dabbling. So many people have dabbled. If you're listening to this show, you've probably got some interest in natural medicine and alternative healthcare, something like that.
Sure.
And so you've probably dabbled. You probably, even at Walgreens or Walmart or whatever, you probably bought some supplements. You know, maybe your grandma used to use Shackley, and so you've been using their products for years or whatever it is. And so many people dabble, and they're like we were saying, I'm tired. What should I take? Well, here, let's take this energy booster supplement. Or you're on late night TV and they go, the joint pain reliever one, you know, by was it Chuck Norris or whoever is marketing, you know, a supplement,
right,
on late night TV. And then we try it. And even my mom gets suckered into these things and sends me an email. What do you think about this one? I'm like, no, you know what to be taking. Do not get suckered in by
Well, and
these
even
things.
If it works for a little bit, Dr. Ben, now you're basically dependent on it. I don't mean like a drug. It's not cocaine. But I mean, your body is dependent on that to keep the symptoms at bay. You're not fixing anything.
Sure. And even with supplements, it can do that. Where my theory is that we want to take as little as needed to get the desired result, meaning that if you need to lick that pill once a day and you feel good, okay, great, that's what you need to do for now. But long term, we do not want somebody taking enzymes every day, having to take adrenal supplements every day, having to take something to keep their blood sugar down. I do, if you haven't seen our Facebook page, check out F8 Well Centers. We've got a couple followers on there.
I love it.
A lot of videos on YouTube. We were just counting up. We're over almost 700 videos on YouTube. F8 Well Centers on YouTube. You can subscribe to that channel as well. Search in there. You can search for all types of different things. But I do a live Q&A on Thursday morning, and somebody asks, what's the best supplement I can take for stabilizing my blood sugar?
Okay, just take lots of cinnamon and never mind what you eat.
Right. You know, you can get that giant tub at Costco of cinnamon, and you just, you know, 14 tablespoons a day, and you'll be fine.
And red yeast rice, and that'll clear out all the cholesterol, go away magically, and you can keep eating, you know, 5 pounds of pizza per night.
Yep. And if you don't sleep well, and you let your blood sugar get all out of balance and stress your body out and your immune system's depleted, and you just take a whole bunch of zinc, you're going to get fixed. So here's the, we're poking fun at supplements, even though, you know, I take a bunch every day, and we prescribe them to our patients and all kinds of things, but it's at the appropriate time while you're making the changes and supporting and nourishing the body so that it can actually function like it needs to and not cover up a symptom. And so that's the important part, is there's no amount of blood sugar supplement. Blood sugar is my shtick. I've got a blood sugar book. Kind of known as the blood sugar guy. We use continuous glucose monitors with every patient. You know, it's our thing. And yet, we have a whole slew of supplements that are labeled in our with our logo and everything on there. We don't have a blood sugar supplement. How funny is that, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know what, Dr. Ben, so many of the times, I think people change the word. They think of supplement as substitute. Okay, it's a substitute for doing all the right things in my life. Okay, I'll just take a supplement and make all the right things okay. I mean, make all the wrong things right, and that's going to work. Really quick here, because I want to get to diet and health on this. We're talking to Dr. Ben Galliard, Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins in Denver. The phone numbers are, write these down, 970-282-1173. That's 970-282-1173. That's in Fort Collins. And in Denver, it's 720-704-6147. That's 720-704-6147. Or you can just find them at f8wellcenters.com. All right. Now, I asked you earlier how many of the issues are re-stimulating old problems. I'm going to ask you this. How many of the issues are simply tied to poor diet and health? In other words, we're talking about long COVID. We're talking about after effects of COVID. The COVID's gone a month after you got it, but you're having these after effects. How much of that is just because you had poor diet and health in the first place?
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're seeing. I've looked at multiple studies that have been done on post-COVID syndrome, whatever you want to call it. And what they found is that the people that were worse off going into it, and this one was specifically looking at brain function. So the more they had ADD issues or depression or brain fog or were closer to Alzheimer's, the worse off they were with those post-COVID. So their ADD is worse. Their depression is worse. Their potential Alzheimer's and forgetfulness and brain degeneration is worse. And so it's kind of like the disease itself when people were flared up. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of people that died with COVID, and a lot of those people were already very inflamed, very flared up, and it was just that next thing, that next needle mover that pushed them past that point of that their body could handle.
Okay. Well, going forward, I know a lot of people hear that and they're thinking, oh my gosh, it's hopeless. Is it? I mean, can you basically put them on the right path? And what are some things, let's get just a few tips right up front. What are some tips you usually give people to help them recover from long COVID? I mean, what are some of the first things they would usually wind up doing?
Yeah, so the first step is going to be looking at that inflammatory process. This is the number one thing that we see with patients, and that's even either post-shot or post-infection, is that their inflammatory process has been stimulated.
Now, what do you mean by the inflammatory process?
Yeah, so there's certain markers that we look at, C-reactive protein, homocysteine, some different markers in the blood work that show us about inflammation. Inflammation is not just, oh, my elbow's swollen today, or I sprained my ankle. Inflammation can be all the way down at this cellular level where your cells get inflamed and they can start causing other problems. We know this is one of the things that happened when people ended up going on ventilators and having the lung issues, was this cytokine storm was stimulated. And the cytokine storm was kind of, when we were first learning about COVID, we're like, holy cow, you got to do everything you can in those first 7 days to not let this cytokine storm be stimulated. Because once that happens, that was when, you know, they did a lot of these studies with hydroxychloroquine or some of these other drugs that they didn't want shown work. And so they did these studies when somebody had already gotten into the hospital, when they had already gotten to that cytokine storm stage, and there was, you know, there really nothing was working at that point. And so the whole point of taking HCQ and a bunch of these other things was at the original onset to prevent it from getting into this major inflammatory cascade.
And well, so, yeah, I mean, Dr. Ben, if I may, it's too late to grab an umbrella if you're already drenched.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you've been out camping and hiking, and you get soaked, and you're like, oh, good, I'm going to now go into the tent and warm up. No, that doesn't happen. You need to have prevented getting wet, because once you're wet, it's and it's 38 degrees out, it's not much fun.
Exactly. Okay, so, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, that inflammatory process is just, it's stimulating. And for those people that had COVID and ended up stimulating the inflammation, it can go one. And this was a study that people actually volunteered for this. In this study, they had spinal taps, which is where you go in and pull CSF fluid out of the spinal cord, which isn't much fun, but people actually volunteered for that. And they tested this CSF fluid in these people that had long COVID, and they found a couple really interesting things. There were proteins in there, these inflammatory proteins that were driving inflammation in the brain and spinal cord, and they also found some antibodies. They weren't sure where they were going to be targeting. Antibodies are the telltale sign of autoimmune conditions. So they were being stimulated, and they weren't differentiated enough yet to know which tissue they were going to be targeting for destruction. But a lot of these people that had long COVID had basically pre-autoimmune going on in their body.
Wow. Okay, really quick here. Now, we've talked about basically inflammation as a major thing. What is another major thing that you see people having to deal with coming into long COVID?
Yeah, so the just like we were talking about the brain, that brain fog is a major, major part of this. People especially, and it was interesting, another study they did, they were looking at different symptoms, and they found that certain symptoms were more prevalent in people that had different variants of COVID as well. So the initial one that went through way back in 2020,
right,
those people were more likely to have some brain fog, have some neurological symptoms, lung issues, because that was more of that lung-based one, where some of the other ones are having more of the fatigue and some other symptoms in there. So it was really interesting how some of it depended on which variant somebody had. But brain fog, definitely one that is across the board. We see it with patients all the time. And that's the great part about our process, is when we do a brain map, we can tell in a brain map, it's not like we're going in and zapping anything, or it's a very simple, non-invasive process. We go in, we check the electrical activity of what's going on in the brain, and we can tell which systems are depleted, which ones are going to be higher, which ones are going to be lower, and which parts of the brain And some of those are going to be related to brain fog or anxiety or depression or ADD or insomnia. And we can tell, is this really a brain-based issue as opposed to is this an inflammation or metabolic or anything like that? So when we start looking at that brain map, we can tell intimately what's going on inside the body and the brain and what is going to be the most appropriate course of treatment.
Fantastic. Okay, we got about 2 minutes left here, so I'm going to package two questions together. You answer them back to back. First one is simply weight. How beneficial is losing weight going to be in helping you with long COVID generally? And secondly, I want you once again to mention your new patient special and walk people through it.
Absolutely. So like I always say, weight is not the problem.
Nope.
Somebody's health, it's the symptom of ill health. And so just like cardiovascular disease, there's people that aren't overweight that have cardiovascular disease and strokes. There's people that aren't overweight that have all types of different underlying conditions, but weight is just one of those symptoms. So here's the deal. If you lose weight, you're not necessarily going to get any healthier. But if you get healthy, there's a very good chance you're going to lose weight. So if you focus on the things to get your life back, to get your body healthy, which is what we do at FA, we get the life back, we get the body strong, we get the body healthy, you're going to lose weight and you're going to feel way better and your long COVID's going to get better and you're going to be less likely to have that cardiovascular disease and that Alzheimer's and all those different things. So for anybody, new patients coming in, we do $97, and that's an in-depth neurologic and metabolic exam with one of our doctors. We do the brain map that's included in there. We sit down, we review these plus blood work and look at this whole process of what exactly is going on. The first thing we need to know before we accept somebody as a patient is, can we help them? Can we help them? Are they motivated? Are they ready to move their feet? If that's a yes, then great. Let's jump in and get you your life back.
Basically $97, and you narrow their paths from 50 to 1 and put them on the right path.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Dr. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. And everybody out there, if you're having any problems with long COVID, just go to go to f8wellcenters.com and get signed up. Dr. Ben, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great day out there and stay strong.
You bet. Have a great day. You've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard, brought to you by Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and now Denver. I'm Andy Pate. Until next Thursday, be informed, be wise, and be focused on a healthier tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.